and BriggsAuto.com. Get in the game.
Welcome back into the game. Tyler Dreiling, Mitch Fortner with you until 6 o'clock. K-State baseball will be coming your way later on this evening. The Wildcats with their final non-conference game before conference play begins. They host Omaha tonight, and then it is the Texas Longhorns that are on deck for the weekend. Texas, by the way, 0-3 start to Big 12 play as they were swept by Texas Tech in their first conference series over the weekend. In this hour, here in just a couple minutes, we will talk to our Powercat Game Day blogger, Cole Manbeck, his thoughts on K-State basketball, the loss in the round of 64 to Cincinnati, where K-State goes from here moving forward, and of course the big news of the weekend that was college basketball related but not necessarily NCAA tournament related. Brad Underwood, former K-State assistant or associate head coach, now headed from Oklahoma State to Illinois after 1 year in Stillwater. We'll get Cole's reaction to that, and later on in this hour I'll share a couple reasons why I think this could potentially have some positive side effects for K-State if you hope that Brad Underwood will one day be the coach in Manhattan. We'll also finish off the show with You Can't Be Serious and the return of Jabroni of the Week. For now, joined by Cole Manbeck, our Powercat Game Day blogger. Cole, we're going to start with K-State basketball, and then we'll move on to what I think is probably the bigger story, or at least the juicier story in Manhattan at the moment. But first of all, if I asked you to compare how you feel about K-State basketball today to where you felt or how you felt about K-State basketball a week ago, which was right before last Tuesday, was right before K-State played Wake Forest in the first four. How does it compare today than to a week ago?
That's a good question. Probably neutral to where I was a week ago. I mean, the Wake Forest win, I think I was more optimistic when I talked to you guys on Thursday after that. But then the Cincinnati game, just the way K-State competed, and Cincinnati's a hard team to play, but it's a game that honestly I thought K-State had a good shot to win and didn't execute. I don't know if effort so much was the issue or if it was just a matter of simply not making shots, but, you know, it was one of the better Cincinnati teams that they played or offensively in the last several years, but still, you know, Cincinnati's not a great offensive team by any means, and to let them hit their first nine shots from the floor was certainly disappointing. So, you know, I think Bruce Weber, you didn't ask me this, but I think he'll be back, barring some unforeseen change, and we'll see where they go from there going next season. But, yeah, I'm pretty much neutral on where I was last Tuesday to now.
Yeah, I think the win over Wake Forest pretty much locked up that he would be back going into next year, so I agree with you on that. Talking with you a little bit more about the Cincinnati game, and I don't mean this to sound or don't mistake this to mean that I'm giving excuses to the K-State team, but I was just really impressed with how good Cincinnati was, and it just looked like it was a matchup of a team that was clearly a round of 32 or a Sweet 16 caliber team versus a team that had to rely on the first four to make the NCAA tournament, and that was just the difference between the two programs and where they're at right now. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, you know, I thought Cincinnati played really well, and honestly, they hit some shots that they don't normally hit. Troy Copain is a career, well, in his last 2 years, you know, the point guard for Cincinnati, he's been shooting an average of 37% from the floor for two seasons, and, you know, he comes out and starts the game 6-6 shooting. They fed the post. Kyle Washington played well. Gary Clark, obviously, is a tough mismatch because he's got the ability to stretch the floor, but then bang down low, and they got after it on the glass and pounded the rebounding, and, you know, they're just a physical team that is known for defense, and so I'm not particularly surprised at what happened. You know, I think there were a lot of matchups like that, though. Obviously, every other 11 seed advanced beat the 6 seed or beat the 3 seed to get into that round of 32, except K-State. I think certainly in many of those instances, the 6 or 3 seed were more talented than Cincinnati, but, you know, it's just the inconsistency of this K-State team on the offensive end, and I'm not surprised that they struggled in that game just because you look, you know, they tend to struggle against good defensive teams like West Virginia, Baylor, in terms of offense and scoring.
One of the things that I was thinking about after the game, I think that a couple weeks ago, if you would have asked which senior K-State will miss most on next year's team, the easy answer would have been DJ Johnson. But I think that Wesley Wundu at least made a little bit of a case for himself with the way that he played in the final five or six games of the season. I still think the answer is probably DJ, but in your opinion, do you think there's a huge gap there between who K-State is going to miss most on next year's roster?
Yeah, you know, DJ certainly makes sense, and I would have said the same thing earlier in the year, but I'm honest, I'm going to go with Wesley Wundu, and the reason being is he's so versatile. And he's got point guard ability to bring the ball up the floor. Now, I know he makes mistakes sometimes, decisions, and turns the ball over. But when you have a 6'7" or 6'8" guy that has point guard skills and the ability to bring the ball up the floor and developed a jump shot that was certainly respectable this season, plus his slashing ability and his length to defend and rebound, I mean, Wundu really can do it all. And there's a reason why there's a chance he might get drafted in the NBA draft this year. And so I would go with that. I think they're going to miss Wundu just because I don't think they have great returning ball handlers. And, you know, they used Wundu at the point guard position many times and had him bring the ball up the court. Now you lose that versatility. It's hard to replace that. Xavier Sneed, I know he gets compared to Wundu sometimes, but Sneed is not there yet with the ball handling ability. He does not have that skill set that Wundu had because if we remember, Wundu was a 6'2" kid out of high school that grew 5 to 6 inches his last year of high school and then into K-State. So, you know, he was hard and really developed that skill set.
Well, going into next season, there are two clear things that K-State needs to address. They need to find a true point guard that would allow Kamau Stokes to play the two a little bit more, which is his natural position. And then there's replacing DJ inside. If K-State is able to do those two things, what do you think their ceiling is next year? And if they are not, how poor of a year could K-State potentially be looking at next year?
Well, I think if they can get, you know, if Isaiah Maurice can significantly, you know, take significant strides going into next season, because what we saw down the stretch was a guy that certainly has quite a bit of offense potential. And if he can, you know, really invest in the program this offseason and become better, you know, he's a guy that I'm not going to say he's going to give you DJ's, you know, rebounding and defense necessarily, although Maurice's defense really improved. But I think he's certainly a guy that could give you, you know, 9 points, 5, 6 rebounds a game next year if he invests and really improves. And so you look at the numbers, I mean, that's close to what DJ Johnson gave K-State this year. I think that really it's just a matter of, you know, I think they need better guard play. And I think Stokes is better off the ball. Barry Brown, you know, he's a bit inconsistent with his jump shot, but I think he certainly brings enough athleticism and defense to the table that he's a valuable asset. So I think you really have to hope that Cartier Jara is the guy that can step in next year and, you know, give you adequate minutes at the point guard spot. And I certainly think K-State needs to go out right now and find a true point guard and an experienced point guard. And that's hard to do because there's not a lot to choose from now. There's going to be a lot of grad transfers that are immediately eligible. But the good ones usually get swooped up by big-time programs, as we've seen before. So K-State's going to have to really fight to maybe lock down one of those guys.
More likely next year, second round or miss the tournament?
You know, they still have two scholarships to fill, and so I'm just questioning where they go on that, and I'm curious who they land there. If you ask me today, though, you know, with their current roster, without those two scholarships filled and knowing who they'd have, I would say K-State's more likely to miss the tournament next year. And I hope I'm certainly wrong on that. You know, when you go down the roster, you know, there's just a lot of question marks. We don't know anything really about Cartier Jara right now. James Love didn't really get to practice this whole season due to the foot injury. So you've got a freshman big man that's going to be really raw next year. So you have a big question mark there. And then you've got three recruits coming in that, you know, I'm not saying Power 5 offers are everything in basketball, especially when you look at Frank Mason and, you know, Devontae Graham. I mean, they were committed to Towson and Appalachian State before the big-time offers came. But these three guys coming in currently don't hold a Power 5 offer, according to rivals outside of K-State. So I just think there's, you know, some rawness there. And you're talking about, when I say that, you've got five guys on scholarship that are unproven right now that you don't know anything about. So I would say K-State would be more likely at this point to miss the tournament, but if they go out and land a true point guard with really good skills and a big man that's adequate, could replace DJ Johnson or give you that body off the bench, that big body, I think they would make the tournament.
I'd agree with just about all of that. And in full disclosure, I think that, you know, I've seen a couple of names of potential transfers already, and the transfer market is obviously such a big deal in college basketball now, but I have seen a couple names out there of guys that either had K-State connections previously or have already said that K-State is interested in them now. So we're going to have to see what K-State does there, if they could potentially find a fifth-year guy. But talking right now with Cole Manbeck, our PowerCat Game Day blogger, and going to switch it over to the biggest news of the weekend around here and in Stillwater and in Champaign, Illinois, with Brad Underwood leaving Oklahoma State for Illinois. Cole, how'd you find out the news, and what's the first 10 seconds like in your mind after seeing that come across?
So, yeah, this is actually a bit of a funny story. So I was in Council Grove at my in-laws, and they live on the city lake out there in Council Grove, and I was fishing before some of the basketball games I wanted to watch on Saturday. So I'm out fishing off the dam on the rocks, and I get a text. And all it says is, "Wow, Underwood," with 3 exclamation marks and 2 question marks. And that's all it says. So you can imagine what's
oh, my goodness. My oh, that would have been brutal.
I'm trying to figure it out. So I get on Twitter right away. My phone started blowing up. I get on Twitter, and I see the news of him to Illinois. Honestly, my thought process was, you know, something happened with K-State that I missed, that they made a quick announcement about Bruce Weber, possibly, and then had Underwood named that quickly or something along those lines. That's
right.
Really what popped into my head. So, it really reminded me of when I was in St. Louis 5 years ago, 2012. I was there for a wedding in K-State. It was Final Four Saturday, the day Bruce Weber was named head coach, and it just came out of left field on me then. And I remember having to kind of cover the press conference via the K-State HD broadcast and helped the Manhattan Mercury guys with the story from my hotel room watching the video of it. It came so far out of left field then. And this really reminded me of that situation. I did not see it coming. I was really, really floored and shocked that this news hit.
Do you think that this is, and I'm not asking, you know, to get too controversial here or anything, but at the surface, do you think this is a smart move for Brad Underwood's career?
Well, here's the thing that looks bad for Brad is, you know, he's a guy now that jumped jobs, you know, a couple different times.
Right.
At Oklahoma State once. Now, obviously, I think he's going to be at Illinois for a little while, especially with that buyout. It's definitely interesting. I'm having a hard time answering that question just because I also think the timing of it looks bad for Underwood. And he might not care, and if he wins, it's not going to matter. But the fact that his team lost and 24 hours later he's named the head coach at Illinois, I mean, usually something's going on in the background while his team's still playing when situations like that happen. So I don't think that's the best look. But you know what? In terms of Illinois, they have expectations there that are a little bit higher than they probably should be, and they think they should be really good. But you know, I think the one big question mark when you look at Underwood, we know he can coach, right? So what's the big question mark we've had so far? Can he really develop, recruit and develop his own program and bring guys in? Well, now that he's at Illinois, that sells itself. And so he's probably going to be able to land some decent talent no matter what, now that he's at a program like that. And we know that he can coach guys. And so if he can really get that culture to change there, then I think it's a good move for him. Because he'll be able to get some guys that are talented to go play there. And then it's a matter of him changing the culture within that program, which I certainly think he's capable of doing.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, I think that you're very correct in saying that there are some aspects of this that aren't a great look, although I'll say that Mike Holder has a lot more questions to answer right now at Oklahoma State than Brad Underwood does at Illinois. But if he wins in the long run, then ultimately it probably isn't going to matter that much. But the question I want to end with is this, and this is the big question that's been asked so many times over the last couple of days here in Manhattan. Brad Underwood's chances of ever coaching here, do they go up or down or stay neutral because of this move?
Well, in the immediate future, they obviously stay neutral or go down. I mean, But I think in the long run, it's still neutral. And the reason I say that is, you know, we go back to the Bob Huggins situation when he left K-State, you know, and he had been approached by West Virginia several years before that while he was at Cincinnati, and he turned them down. But then he had that one last chance to go home when he was at K-State to go back to Morgantown because he was getting up there in age, and he took that opportunity. Brad Underwood's 53 years old, so, you know, let's say K-State has a new coach again. You know, let's say they go through a new coach 5 years from now on top of Bruce Weber, then another coach. You know, Brad's probably still going to be 58, 59 years old. And if K-State called and he had proven himself successful at Illinois, then it's certainly, you know, that last opportunity to probably go home. And I think he would jump on that at that point and come back to Manhattan. So it could also be a positive for K-State just because, you know, now he's going to go prove himself at another Power 5 program. And we'll see how he does there. And if he's successful at Illinois, he would have been successful at every stop he'd been at. And so, you know, Illinois is basically betting him for you and showing the proof of how good of a coach he can be and develop kids. So I still think there's a chance, to answer your question, that he's a coach at K-State in 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that's one of the points I'm going to get into later in this hour when I talk about it more in depth. But I think that had he stayed at Oklahoma State for another 5 or 6 years or during this period of time that you're talking about, it would have been a little bit tougher for him to leave Oklahoma State for K-State just because of the same conference kind of thing. Now it could be sold a little bit differently if he's leaving Illinois for K-State. That's one thing that goes into it, but ultimately you're probably correct in saying that at least for the next couple of years, it's not looking very realistic that he would return.
Yeah, I can't see K-State shelling out, you know, a $7.5 million buyout a couple years from now, or 6.3. You know, I could see the 6.3, but I don't think the timing's going to line up on that, anyways. And so, it's just a lot of money to pay. And look, I was hesitant. I'd be hesitant to give Brad Underwood $3 million a year right now. And Illinois did that, obviously. And I mean, I'm as big of a Brad fan as you can find. I mean, I love Brad Underwood. I think he's a great personality. I think he creates a culture, but he still needs to show that he can, you know, really recruit his own guys and develop his own program. And $3 million, I mean, the reality is Oklahoma State went 20-13 this year. And so it was a decent season and an improvement upon last year, but, you know, that's about par for the course for the talent they had coming back. So, yeah, I still think he needs to prove himself a little more. $3 million a year is a lot of money to give out. You know, K-State was going to have to do that, plus pay that buyout. You know, that's just asking a lot.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And it's a rough time for the fans down in Stillwater right now, especially with the announcement today that Juwan Evans is leaving for the NBA. But K-State fans kind of know what that's like. They felt it back in April 2007. Cole, really appreciate the time. Good insight today, as always. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks, Tyler.
That's Cole Manbeck, our PowerCat Game Day blogger. Just so much intrigue with this Brad Underwood story, and I've seen a lot of K-State fans that are panicking over this. Some K-State fans that realize, I think, as I do, that there could be some positive aspects to that, and that's what we'll get into next. Reasons that I think you could look at this as a positive for K-State if your end game is Brad Underwood at one point being the head coach of K-State's basketball program. That's coming up next on The Game. We'll also have Jabroni of the Week, and You Can't Be Serious to finish things off. You're listening to K-Man.